Howdy, neighbors. Welcome to another Ag Perspectives podcast from the Radio Oklahoma Ag Network and OklahomaFarmReport.com. I'm Ron Hayes, and joining us today, Chelsea Good, Vice President for Governmental Affairs for the Livestock Marketing Association. Chelsea and others associated with LMA are gathering this week at the Omni in downtown Oklahoma City for the annual meeting of the Livestock Marketing Association. This is a trade group that represents auction barn operators and others in the marketing industry for livestock across the country. LMA has several sessions planned to look at where their industry is and where it may be headed. They'll have some business that they'll conduct. And then, perhaps most certainly, they will be hosting the WLAC, the World Livestock Auctioneer Championship, on Saturday, June 15th at the Oklahoma National Stockyards. We're back with Chelsea. Talk about some of the policy things that she's following on behalf of LMA here in just a few moments.
Dakota Moss with Livestock Risk Services knows the LRP.
The LRP goes off the market every single day, so prices change with LRP every afternoon as soon as we get that closing price.
And now's the time that you can make Livestock Risk Services your agent.
So if someone is wanting to look at changing livestock agents, they need to fill out a transfer application by June 30th at the latest, because July 1 is the start of the 2025 livestock year. With Livestock Risk Services, we specialize in LRP. It's our bread and butter.
Learn more by going to livestockriskservices.com. 2024 LMA convention coming to the heartland, to Oklahoma City. The Oklahoma National Stockyards are going to be hosting the Livestock Auctioneer Championship, the World Livestock Auctioneer Championship this weekend. Chelsea Good with us today from LMA. Chelsea, you've got a lot of things that you're watching closely in our nation's capital. I guess maybe top of mind, what's going on with the Farm Bill, House Ag Committee, and just now Senator Bozeman over on the Senate side.
Absolutely. Yeah, Farm Bill is obviously on top of mind for lots of folks. I was back in D.C. when they did that markup and pass out of House Ag. It was kind of an interesting day to be in the room. That started at 11 a.m. and they didn't finally pass it out of committee until 2:30 a.m. or 12:30 a.m. The next day. So it was a long haul, but it's actual progress. We're actually moving forward on that bill. LMA obviously is really interested in some of the livestock provisions. In particular, livestock auction owners unfortunately can't own or invest in a small or medium-sized meat processor. Actually, all three of the frameworks that have come out so far would correct that piece, including what passed out of House Ag Committee.
You mentioned that both of the Senate versions are looking to probably correct that as well.
Correct, which I think just means that Congress has done a good job, our congressional champions, of really getting that idea out there. You know, there's the A-Plus Act that's been introduced the second Congress in a row. It's got lots of bipartisan co-sponsors, and that's really what it takes in that city, is to build the momentum and build the consensus, and I think we're there on this one.
As far as, you know, some of the other aspects of Farm Bill, anything else you've watched in particular?
You know, on the Senate version, in Stabenow's framework, there is something on prompt payment, and that's something we care about. Probably something that is not as well-developed as the A-Plus Act in terms of there's no marker bills out there. But it's a problem we've been talking about for a while, that the mail service is slowing down, and so the auctions will pay producers that day. A lot of them will pick up their checks. They're waiting longer and longer to receive that payment from buyers, and that's putting them in a poor financial position, and we're trying to encourage maybe some more electronic forms of payment.
That seems to be a good solution, but been a little bit slow in being able to get that done.
I believe that our membership has the right idea here. Anytime you're talking about money, it gets sticky, and people really want to look it over and evaluate it. End of the day, we need some answers here, and I think we'll continue to work with industry to get there.
When you think about some of these other things that are going on right now in Washington, there's a lot of regulations being bandied about. Of course, it is an election year.
Yeah, there are, and you know, I think that there's a push to get some things out as early as they can in 2024, knowing that there will be an election this fall. One example of that would be animal disease traceability. There was a final rule that came out that will require starting in November for the currently covered animals, so cows and bulls crossing state lines that are beef cattle, to have an electronic ear tag rather than just the metal bright tag that they've had traditionally. That is definitely something I think this administration wanted to get out well in advance of the election, because it's a sensitive topic.
There are some budgetary resources available. Will that help both auctions as well as individual producers?
It really should. That's something our policy is clear on, is we oppose an unfunded mandate as it relates to animal ID. Whether you're excited about tagging or you're not, and there's a lot of people in both of those camps, nobody thinks that that burden should fall on the producer. So we were pleased that Ag Appropriations required that USDA continue to pay for the tags they always have, and infrastructure. And infrastructure, to me, means readers and potentially other things at that auction market where those tags might be getting read.
And of course, I mean, where you're talking about some sort of a reader in the chute or in the pins as they're coming through the auction barn itself, the actual ring, there's a lot of expense that could be there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so that's why I think we need to keep our eyes on that, that, you know, the cost is not just the tags itself, it's the readers. And honestly, it's labor, you know, the people that are putting those tags in. And, you know, we're moving electronic. I had a barn tell me recently, look, I've got somebody that's a pretty minimal wage type employee that will write down tag numbers for me. If I now need somebody who's going to scan those numbers into a computer and be able to upload those and send them to the state, that's probably a different price point in terms of employee type. I thought that was a really good point.
The general attitude out in the country, as you talk to a lot of your members that you're representing in our nation's capital, what's really on their mind? What are they most concerned about right now?
Honestly, this animal ID is one of them, that we have a lot of markets and really a lot of customers of the livestock auctions that are concerned about mandates and really are looking around the corner and wanting to make sure that USDA isn't trying to take it another step. You know, we're already tagging the cows. We've got traceability there. But as it relates to feeder cattle, that would be a significant additional amount of animals. And that's something at this point in time, my membership and the producers they work with oppose.
A year ago, we talked a little bit about this whole ghost cattle situation. Are we getting any closer to really resolving some of these problems that we were talking about a year ago?
We are, in terms of, I've been pleased that USDA is working pretty hard on dealer statutory trust. You know, it's a good improvement to the law that was passed in 2020, but it does require USDA to step up and do some things they haven't traditionally done. We're seeing that start to happen. I believe it was the McLean situation we were talking about in depth last year. There's a bankruptcy there. There's a lot of people involved. As an attorney myself, I have to laugh. Anytime you get that many attorneys involved and a bankruptcy involved, it's going to be slower than you want it to be. But I'm seeing some good indications that the answer at the end of the line is going to be better in terms of the right people getting paid, and that producers are much better situated because that dealer trust exists than they would be if it wasn't.
One of the things I didn't mention or ask about was mandatory price reporting. Are you ever going to get to the point where we're not going to just kick this thing down the road?
Boy, I hope so. We're awfully supportive. We think it's a helpful thing that our industry supports, that USDA does. And we had 5-year reauthorizations at one point in time. It seems like that's been a while ago, that we've kind of taken a hitch every year on the appropriations process, and that process has gotten sticky. And so big picture, when I talk to our congressional champions, I tell them, LMA supports mandatory price reporting. We want to work with you to continue to see it authorized. A long-term authorization would be welcome from my folks.
Chelsea, tell me a little bit about your members. Obviously, are working with our cattle producers out across the country. They are your lifeblood. They really are the key to these markets being successful. And I know that some of your markets operators, your owners, are worried about the financial health of these folks.
Yeah, that's something that I've been hearing a lot over the last handful of years. Land's so much more expensive. Maybe we're losing land to some other uses. In some areas, it's recreation. In some areas, it could be row crop. But a sale barn operator gets really concerned when they sell for a family for the last time, and they know that there's not a next generation coming behind. So we believe that producer viability, producer profitability really matters. We've seen the markets in certain states partner with the state cattlemen's, Montana, Alabama, some other places, to have have producer profitability listening sessions to bring in producers to kind of hear some of their thoughts about what are their challenges, what's holding them back. I don't think there's a silver bullet here, but there could be silver buckshot. You know, I think a piece of it certainly estate tax and keeping a high threshold there. Maybe some other tax incentives as well, though. Estate tax really only impacts families that have some pretty significant assets. There's many in our industry who do, but there's also some young people that don't have much, but a work ethic and a will to be in the industry, and I want to find a way to let them succeed as well.
I guess that age of those ranchers, that's always a little bit of a worry.
It is. It's creeping up there. And so, you know, love the fact that we've got multi-generation ranches, and it's a profession that many people want to do up till the bitter end. So my grandpa's 99. I was with him this weekend. He doesn't have cows anymore, but it took him probably a full decade to get rid of his cows. I mean, he was getting rid of his cows until he saw something that was just going for a little less than it was worth at the sale barn, and he'd bring home more cows. And I love that spirit, but what we really need to focus on is how do we get new and beginning producers in as well.
Thanks, Chelsea. Chelsea Good, who's Vice President for Government and Industry Affairs for the Livestock Marketing Association based out of the Kansas City area. They are in town. They are in Oklahoma City for the annual meeting of LMA and the 60th World Livestock Auctioneer Championship that will be held this coming Saturday at the Oklahoma National Stockyards. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.